This is Dr. Tar with Races.
This is Professor Feather.
This is the Father Guido Midnight Gadfly.
This is Dr. Head. And you are experiencing...
A really haunting way.
Unsane Radio. Yes. Here you are with us once again. We've got a good movie we're going to talk about today. We've got a movie we're going to talk about today. Let me rephrase that. I won't necessarily say it's a good movie. But it is really a good movie in a lot of ways. This movie is called Twixt, or Twixt what?
Betwixt Now and Sunrise.
Right, but it was originally released as Twixt. Written and directed by Francis Ford Coppola, and it was it stars Val Kilmer as one of the best protagonist names I've ever heard. Hal Baltimore, that's his name. Hal Baltimore.
Hal Baltimore.
Hall, yeah, I'm sorry, Hall Baltimore. Hall. Not Hal. Hal, you're right. Hall Baltimore. Hall.
Thank you.
And what's her name? Elle Fanning, who plays Virginia. And then one of my all-time favorite actors of all-time favorite times of I've ever had, Bruce Dern. Bruce Dern is great as the sheriff in this movie. This is about a third-rate writer who has a series of witchcraft books, and he's come to this small town, and what's really great about it, I like the opening, is he comes in, it's this idyllic little town, and he says, "Where's the library? We don't have a library." So he ends up in the hardware store with a little table
in a little corner
and his books on it. And this is Val Kilmer, this is Hall Baltimore, and he's got a flask there, which most people would think it was water, but you watch him take a drink of it, and it's definitely alcohol. And you immediately you understand that this guy is a drinker immediately, because here he is in this hardware store. You know, that's really nice storytelling visually, I think, because it, you know, means so much throughout the rest of the story. So he kind of hangs out with this. What really sets things off is he's bored. He doesn't want to be here, you know. The sheriff comes along, and this sheriff is played by Bruce Dern.
Sheriff, what's his name?
LaGrange. Bob LaGrange, I think, isn't
Bobby,
it?
Billy. Bobby. Is it Billy?
Billy or Bobbly Bobby? Billy Bobby?
I thought
Billy Bob?
Billy Bob. It's Billy LaGrange.
It's Sheriff Bobby LaGrange.
It's Bobby LaGrange.
Bobby LaGrange.
Yeah, I know that. But anyway, he's great. He comes in and he makes odd woodworking stuff, which totally endeared me right away to him. And then he's a writer, a wannabe writer. So he talks to Hall Baltimore and says, "You know, I've got this whole thing going on, and you know, we ought to collaborate on something. I got some stories. Would you like to read them and all that?" And one thing leads to another, and this all kind of starts out kind of innocently until he sees this decrepit old hotel, and they walk up and says, "Edgar Allan Poe slept here, you know," and it has the date and everything. That imprints on his mind, like, and becomes one of the main focuses of this movie. This movie is not exactly what it seems. It's there's a lot of interplay between reality and dream worlds, non-reality, or is that whatever that reality is in your dream worlds? So I'm going to pass it on, because I could say a lot more about this movie, but I want to see what everybody else's reaction to this movie is. I will say, overall, I think the movie's kind of uneven. I won't say that I would give it like a 10 out of 10, because there's certain factors that I would go into, but I'll leave it at that. And I'm going to pass it on to Midnight Gadfly.
Yeah, it. I saw this a while back, and I think it was a different edit.
Possible. Yes.
Yeah, it was a bit different. I think I liked it, but I think it again. I like anything that has like a microcosm where they're just like in this very small area. But when I look at it, like it's very where they're compositing a lot of stuff, and it really looks like it. But it also then gives it that kind of feel, and I think it, like with Coppola, he actually likes that old movie feel, like what he did with Dracula, you know, where they were really trying to make it look like it was staged and these were sets, and you know, they weren't trying to get away from that kind of
thing. They're being obvious about it. That's what I kind of took away from. I mean,
yeah,
accentuated.
And it's funny because I like a lot of the characters, but it really didn't feel like there was a lot of character arcs going through other than Bobby and Hall. You know what I mean? Those were the two. And then V had a little bit of a character arc going through.
But not enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything to me just felt kind of like it wasn't. I don't know. Like, I don't know how to describe it.
Disjointed or something.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it was fully conceived. And like they felt like they were going to go shoot it and edit it, and it might then reveal itself. And it didn't fully reveal itself. It especially the ending. I'm not going to reveal the ending, but I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That's it? You know, I'm like, holy shit. So, yeah, that's what I, you know, did.
Dr. Head.
Yeah, there are a couple things I liked. A lot I did not. I liked that they bringing in a lot of this Poe, and Poe becomes this kind of counter character. I like seeing stories where in this fantasy world some mythic character kind of comes to life, and you kind of get to feel like you can know him or this person, and how would this person be in a certain situation? Like the Edgar Allan Poe movie that came out with. You know, a couple years ago. So I like that as a concept. It isn't really. It is up and down. With the look. I know they're trying for a look with the blue tint and the dream sequences and things like that.
Yeah, the black and white. The dream sequences were black and white with splashes of color.
Yeah.
Throughout. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yes, the dream, yeah.
My favorite part of the whole thing, and just because she's such a good actress, Elle Fanning, I think, was just, especially the first time you see her, you know there's this kind of ghostliness, you know, to her. And
the first encounter between her and Hall
is
really, really good.
Beautifully shot, and her performance is mesmerizing. She's fantastic. Like in season Super 8, right? And her again just stands out. It's like, oh my god, I saw that. I'm like, this young girl is gonna be in. She's fantastic.
Can we go back to like when that whole encounter started, though? Like when he was in his room, and that, you know, and he looks out the window, but the whole room, you know, suddenly goes askew. Then he's going out. Then he goes down this mysterious, when everything suddenly, the whole reality, dream, wherever you want to call it.
So was it a dream or was it reality? That's what I said. There's certain areas in here where it's very vague, you know, and I think that's done on purpose, you know.
I think they were ambitious, but I don't think it was particularly well executed.
Yeah.
You know, like they wanted to tell something, but the writing at times was a little flat or a little sloppy. And it just seemed like it just had a hard time getting to where it wanted to go, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Overall, you know, it's an interesting watch, if nothing else, because
I'm glad
there's a lot of experimentation going on in the movie. You know, Coppola is no dummy. You know, he knows what he's doing. What he did with this movie was he had this on the fly editing system that he would take to a theater. And how the audience reacted to certain parts, he would re-edit the film there and show it again. re-edited to reflect what the people reacted to. That's pretty, that right there, if nothing else, that is so cool, you know.
Yeah,
him doing that on the fly, you know, let's do a reaction. Yeah, I just think that's great. But, you know, it doesn't make it a great movie. That's, you know, but it has its moments. I kind of like some of the some of the story, and I liked how they tie the backstory, because this is all a psychological drama. No matter how you look at it, it's pretty much a psychological drama happening within the head of Hal Baltimore, who is a drunk, third rate author,
depressed,
who is still grieving the death of his daughter. How old is his daughter? How old is Virginia? We're getting this, you know, when you start finding these revelations, and you know, this is his subconscious talking to him. That's all it is, you know, and how it's working things out and how he wants to work things out. But I think also that's really interesting, because it's an alcoholic's mind. An alcoholic's mind doesn't work exactly like a normal human's mind works. So
on sleeping pills. He's got those sleeping pills.
And you're doing all the sleeping pills. That's true. Plus the alcohol. You know, you're absolutely right. So, you know, he's totally altering everything. And I appreciate that a lot. I think that works out pretty well. You know, the cinematography in the movie is pretty good. Go ahead, Tar. I'm sorry.
I've been commenting all through this. It was just, yeah, there was a couple of times I almost left it, though. It's just like, okay, you know, it just had that kind of,
what was one of those goes, times?
It veers from this, it just kind of veers from, it almost felt like a Spielberg type movie at first, you know, or Dean, what was that movie, Cold Moon, the girl, it just reminded me of that,
movie.
It reminded me of that kind of a movie, you know, and then it would like, I don't know. It's just, like you were saying, it's uneven. It's just an uneven movie.
I think a lot of things that... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think a lot of things... I think it seems uneven after you watch the movie. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of the unevenness is never answered. You know what I'm saying? That makes it become uneven, because it's never answered. And that becomes that, you know, that.
But is that
conundrum
okay?
of the writer of trying, do I explain it or do I leave it up in the air? Let's talk the Ninth Gate, you know.
Yeah. And besides, it's now.
But I think the Ninth Gate was executed much more effectively.
No, I do too. But I'm just talking about that. The ending, kind of.
I hated it. Right. Yeah.
The Ninth Gate had a better ending, because you could kind of imagine where it was going to go. This, you have no idea, because it's in his brain. Right. It's in his mind. It ends in his mind.
Yeah. If that's your hypothesis, if that's what we're going for, if this is the reality of the movie.
Or did you just die?
It would make perfect sense, because he's not out of the loop. You know, he just shows that he's just endlessly in this loop and not able to get out of it, you know.
That's true. I never thought about that. That's a good idea. That's good. Yeah. No, that's
where you're going with it. It does make perfect sense. Like when I realized those things, like, oh, his daughter's died. Okay. I could see those levels. I still didn't think it was really executed.
Exactly.
Well, because I've seen similar stories like, this is this. And like, I was waiting for something to make it stand out better, but other than Fanning's performance, it was nice seeing Stern.
I took it as him just dying, you know. And at the end, is he going to die, the parapet, the cliff, or is he, you know, sit there on the edge, you know? This is the death of it. Yeah, it's no more reality anymore. You're not seeing the real world anymore. He's in this and. Poe's talking to him, and he's asking him, "You're making a choice. Which way are you going to go? Are you going to continue this story, or that's how I took it. He's grieving him and dying, and alcoholism, because he always wakes up, there's bottles right next to him all the time. You know what I mean?
And he drinks throughout the whole
movie. Yeah, constantly. I mean, he makes, you know, talking to Poe, pours it over the plaque at the house because he slept there. And, yeah.
I liked when he was talking to the one, I guess, of the publisher or something, wanting the money at the $25,000. And he puts his hand in front of the camera, takes the drink, and then removes his hand. Because you see him, his hand moving. I thought that was, there again, I thought that was just an excellent little piece of filmmaking, you know? That's my biggest thing. I look at this movie as kind of an experiment that didn't really go completely the way, you know, planned, with a lot of really good elements to it. And I think it's worth a watch, you know, because there are a lot of interesting things. And we've brought up some stuff here too, you know, that because it is, you know, it's not exactly what it seems in a lot of ways.
But it was a fun watch. Yeah.
Like a dream. I mean, the whole story is like how, you know, I know, like when you guys dream, if there's a great deal of continuity, but there, for me, there is not.
Mm-hmm.
That things jump around and situations become something completely different. But then it might jump back to something that I just, you know, was in that dream, was there. And now that I'm back there in that kind of continuity. It's just, that was really weird. I think part of the problem I had was the end and the supposed revelation that he has about his daughter, and that this is all about him and his daughter, and that he's never gotten over that. I think you already know that very early on when you heard find out that his daughter died. You know what I mean? You're like, that just doesn't play out as anything. And the fact that he doesn't realize that till then, I don't think that has to do with the drugs or anything. So I guess if, you know, what Dr. Head was saying, this is some sort of a loop that he's caught in.
Jacob's Ladder.
Something like that. I guess that would make sense. But it still doesn't make it better.
No, it doesn't. No, you're right.
It doesn't.
You're
right. Yeah. And we could be overly justifying the unevenness of the movie by trying to imagine all the purpose of it. And it could just be a movie that wasn't executed very well. On different levels. I mean, it could be that simple, or it could be very purposeful, because I can also see that as well. If we take all these things into mind, and I did like that subtle shot, the blocking, and then you see the camp, the hand move, because it has to be choreographed. But you notice those little details, all of them add up. They're purposeful. They're not accidental. So that too says, okay, then there is something to this. Because if the director, the writer did not want something on the screen, he or she would not write it, put it on the screen. So everything that we see is important to some degree. So,
yeah, I think there's a lot of like the subtle messages in the film as well, where Virginia is referred to as V. Most of the time, V for vampire, and they think that Flamingo is a vampire, and that the priest slits all the throats so that they don't become vampires, and V escapes, gets with Flamingo. Flamingo takes her on the motorcycle ride and turns her into a vampire, and she looks happy, like she's free. You know what I mean? Like, and she's free of that fucking preacher. You know that? You know the religion. It was, to me, that was kind of like an indictment on, you know, just a religious fervor or something like that. And then the whole thing with the Ouija board, you know, like where they're doing that whole thing, you know, it ended up becoming comic. You know what I mean? It's because that little kid, who the little kid has two purposes: to bring a cheeseburger to the one guy, and then to be there with them to play with the thing. And then they're all yelling at each other like, "You're doing that, you know, you're doing this," you know, starts floating in the air. And I like. My favorite part is when they ask that last question. They're like, "Did somebody kill you?" And he goes, "Bye." They're like, "Oh, it's over. That's done." And then they walk away from it. So I think
that whole scene was just, what's going on? Yeah, it was fun.
Could have been one of those scenes that Coppola cut out. He should have cut out.
It was just so weird. And Bruce Dern was just the fact that I had Bruce Dern in it. But anyway.
Like, it was a Lynchian movie that was not done by David Lynch. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to try to do something that's this weird and disjointed, It has to be David Lynch doing it in order for it to be successful. And Coppola was not able to pull something like that off. You know what I mean? Because I could totally see a lot of this being David Lynch, you know, doing something where his subtle timing and his subtle way of shooting things could have completely transformed how this story was seen. You know, I don't know.
Or Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Disturbing, you know.
Oh, interesting.
But it is, but there it is, you know. I mean, I think that's kind of a testament to the movie. This is really a Coppola movie, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it has a lot of his signature directorial moves in it. And rightfully so, you know. It just not one of his movies that was an absolute 100% success. It bombed a big fucking time at the box.
I think people didn't know what to make of it, maybe.
Yeah.
I wonder. Like,
it or because just really under it, you know, yeah. If you're looking at just a straight vampire movie, a horror movie, it's not, you know?
Right. Yeah. I saw it had, there was those horror themes, but I didn't really ever feel any sense of horror or dread or menace, you know.
Yeah.
You know how when you watch it on stream, you know how they kind of like categorize it, you know, the movie, then they kind of get, when I looked at it, it just says mystery fantasy, you know. I think that more aptly describes this movie than a horror movie. You know, it's not a horror movie by any means, I don't think.
It never left the country either. It only played in the circuits here in the United States. Like, they didn't try to enter it in any film festivals or any of that kind of stuff. It was just, I think it was just an experiment that he did.
I do too. That's what I said. That's what I said originally. I think I agree with you. Yeah. One of the
things I like about Coppola is that he can also do movies that you don't look at and go, oh, that's definitely a Coppola movie. You know, like the Rainmaker.
Which is a
great movie. But you watch that and you're like, there's nothing about that that would tell you that that's a Coppola movie. You know, it's really just a straightforward directing.
That's like Lynch's. What's the story about the lawnmower guy?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd never know it was David Lynch.
You would never know that was a David Lynch.
It was a very, like, documentarian.
Kind of documentary.
Something you would see on PBS. Like, the shots were very, it felt very cozy and very, like, normal.
And it was really good.
Yes, it was good. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I love that movie. But anyway, so that's what I said, you know, it is fast for Coppola. And, the acting's good. I mean, I loved, you know, I had no problem with any of that. You know, just, you know, just the story just kind of, you know, was maybe just a little too experimental.
Yeah.
But I'd still recommend watching it, you know.
At least one time.
Yeah.
Well, the Lynch movie you're talking about is The Straight Story, which I think is a great
straight
title.
Story. Yeah, The Straight Story. Yes.
The Straight Story, you know, from David Lynch. It's like,
from,
you know,
David Lynch.
Yeah, right. So he's always got something going on. Now, this was done, Twixt was done in 2011, which is the same year that Super 8 was done. So that's where Elle
Fanning. Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Okay.
Huh. She's busy, huh?
Yeah, she's just stellar. Just so good.
Amazing.
Yeah. I love Super 8. I'd love to do an episode, at least talk about it sometime, just because those kids, man, the kids were just nailed it. Absolutely love that movie.
Yep.
Yeah, I hated it the first time I watched it.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Because of the too Spielberg-y?
Just because it was too Spielberg-y.
Yeah.
And then the second time I watched it, I went, this is really good because this is a Spielberg movie.
Yes.
Because that's, you know.
Right. Exactly. It was J.J. Abrams
doing it.
And it worked really good. It really does work really good.
Right.
Then you see Stranger Things come out of those too, and it's just
Because it's like his version of E.T. You know?
Yeah, but
you know
what I mean?
Goonies, this. Yeah. The kids.
Yeah, no, I loved it. Right. No, it's so
core.
Good. And just those kids, man, like, you just, and I know that they were brought together for like a month or so before the movie came out so that they could all spend time, or was that the Sandlot? I think it might have been the Sandlot. I don't know.
I thought that was the Sandlot.
Okay, could have been. But I thought these kids got to spend were brought together before, they could hang out and do stuff like that, because their timing, I mean, it was chemistry was real. I'm like, oh my God, these kids are great. You know, I want to see 10 movies with these kids as these kids. I want to see their movies, because seeing the movie at the end was so satisfying. And like, oh good, they finally got the, you know, I wanted this movie. I'm like, yeah, that was awesome. That was great.
Yeah, I think it was better than the Spielberg movie. I mean, when I saw it, I thought there was just that kind of weird twist that Abrams has, especially with the idea of
a little darker.
But it was also like E.T., but not like the E.T. was scary up until the very end, when they figured out that it was just trying to collect these things that would come together and build its ship so that it could get, you know, off.
Get away.
And it looks scary. And it looks scary, though, too. It wasn't like. Yeah,
that was the
E.T.
The Clark movie book, the Clark book.
The devil, yeah.
Childhood's End,
yeah.
Yeah, the alien comes off the ship and looks like a traditional devil.
Yeah,
horns and all that stuff.
Apple had a series on that, didn't they?
I think they did.
Childhood's End. I think I've seen bits and pieces of it. No, I liked the book when I read it. It was fun.
Yeah, good book.
I was a little kid.
Arthur C. Clarke. There we go.
Yeah.
That and Rama. Those were the two I remember a lot.
Okay, well, anything else anybody want to have to say about Coppola or any of this movie? It was called Twixt, or whatever that other name was, Twixt
Now and Sunrise.
Between Now and Sunrise.
Yeah, I like as a title better than just Twixt.
Well, and I watched the version that's up on Prime, and it says the authentic cut, whatever that means. So I watched the authentic cut if we watched it on
Prime. That's what I watched.
I don't know if there's a different, you know, like I'd like, because like you said, and apparently there are other cuts of it. So,
no, it gave same both titles. And then,
yeah.
That's all.
Well, there it is.
So there it is. Twixt.
Twixt. My nipples.
Not one candy bar.
You haven't mentioned in this whole episode.
I know. That was my only disappointment. I forgot to bring it up earlier, but yes, I came into it very excited. I'm like, God damn it, no candy, no
crunch. This is the point. We all four of us just need to pull up a candy bar and just peel it off.
This episode brought to you by...
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump?
And you have been listening to
Broadcasting from Slavic, Lithuania.
We are SunshineRadio.com. Insane Radio is on Facebook. Carl Better is on Facebook. Psycho Cinema. Thank you very much. Over to you, Montag.
Heavy Metal Horror on the Facebook. Heavy Metal Horror on the YouTubes. Montag Lewis on the Instagrams. Heavy Metal and the Horror. And don't forget We Freaks, WEEFREEKZ, family friendly webcomic on Facebook. Done by our own Lufes John Boise.
Shout out to the Vortex.
The Vortex.
All the time. Shout out to WeirdSistersRadio.com. Shout out! I'm not kidding you. Go there sometime. If you're in Eastern Standard Time, go there at 9 o'clock and listen to whatever show they have on. It's a different show every night at 9 o'clock. I'm sorry, 11 o'clock. Not 9 o'clock. 11 o'clock. And they're all different. They're all great. Go and listen to them. Absolutely fantastic.